This doesn't look good. So here we are entering the famous Glover agenda orientation session.
He misses you already.
Always. And we have the local dog, Courage.
So we'll leave this on the table. We have Lee. No, I believe this man's name is Glover.
There's no copies of the agendas, but
Yo. Did you ever get my spreadsheet on money?
No.
I don't have your email.
I made it.
Drew, can you send him my spreadsheet on the 640s?
Yeah.
The big one I just sent out?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Keith, will you do me a favor and close that door, please? Oh, no, the one to your right.
This one? Yeah.
No, we want more riffraff.
More riff and less rap, or what? All right. So we can begin by going around and introducing ourselves. The majority of us know in the room we have some new faces.
This is being recorded, folks, for the Netcast for free radio.
Meeting is being recorded, just so everyone knows. And if for some reason you have a problem with it, please let me know. But we'll go from there.
Yay.
It's only being recorded for unofficial underground purposes.
Except for it can be downloaded off the web.
Anybody can hear it.
Everyone can download it. Open access. All right, so let's just get started because we have limited time, and I'm sure that I can guess what we're all, what many people are here to talk about. But let us go around, and if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, identifying any organizations that you're with, and then we can get started.
Are you going?
It doesn't matter. We'll start with Lee.
Oh, I appreciate going to the left.
There you go.
All right. My name's Lee Brokaw. I'm with the Steering Committee Against the Recall, ACLU, and Veterans for Peace, and that's generally enough.
There you go.
I'm Nicholas Whitehead. I'm not currently representing any organization.
I'm Scott Graham, and I'm in the same group that Nick said.
We are representing each other.
Concerned citizens.
Do you have any of these printed up?
Have any out there, no, but I'll project it up here so we can all follow along.
Cool. And then Keith with Food Not Bombs and Santa Cruz Homeless Union.
Jen C. I'm a student, third year at UCSC. I'm also an intern for Drew.
Oh, cool.
You're those dreaded interns.
Yeah.
I'm another dreaded intern and also a fourth year student. Right. And my name's Sydney.
Was that a Drew intern or a dreaded intern?
A dreaded Drew.
I don't feel dreaded, so I am a Drew intern.
I have to turn my hearing aids up here.
There you go.
You can get some dreads.
I'm Ralph Sonnenfeld. I'm on the Community Advisory Committee on Homelessness, and I'm also involved with some public banking things and the Coastal Commons Land Trust and a few other housing advocacy groups.
Look at all the things. Is there someone that needs access in a wheelchair that I see rolled by?
No, she's just going by. Okay. She's tired of meetings.
Okay.
I gave her a new chair and it's super uncomfortable. She just wants to go home.
Nice. And then you here?
I'm Robert. I'm with Half Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And leave it at that.
Great. And then who just came in?
I don't know. Ooh.
My name is Serge and I hate being recorded.
Ah, well.
It was less for the recording and more for the new interns that are here that don't know you and everyone else knows you. Okay, homeless stuff. Yes, he's on the Community Advisory Committee on Homelessness also. And we'll provide some good insight tonight, as he did last night at the Public Safety Committee meeting, I'm sure, with regards to the beach curfew and needle arguments, which I'm looking forward to. So we can dive right in. I will, like I said, project the agenda up here so we can talk about it, since for some reason they don't have copies out there for you. But Robert does have the master binder that has all of the attachments associated with it.
Did you say Public Safety Committee meeting last time?
Yeah.
Would you put me on a list to let me know? I would have been there. I didn't know.
Absolutely, it was a short meeting. We talked about alternative force besides tasers used by the police department. and they gave us a full presentation of their tactics and rationale and policy and everything that you can listen to. And then if you have additional questions, we could always bring it back again. And the next meeting is going to be focused on providing a forum for people to talk about needles, but we're doing an intentional outreach to all the different groups of the various perspectives to come and have a robust conversation.
You have a date for
followed
that?
With data. Not yet. It'll be open the next month.
But so you'll
I'll let you know. Yeah,
please, absolutely. Please.
Okay, so let's jump right in. You too. Okay. Are there any issues that you want that y'all want to talk about specifically on the agenda? There's a whole bunch of stuff. There's the new committee appointments. There's
I'm just here for the beach.
The beach.
Facial recognition.
Facial recognition. All right, let me pull this up really quick.
I'm interested
now. The health and all policies and implementation work plan.
Okay. Can you keep a note or a list of the ones that people want to talk about? Thank you. And take and if you could take general notes throughout the meeting of stuff, that would be great.
I believe at 6:20.
Okay, in Sydney?
Me too.
Okay, well then between now and 6:20. You got it. You got about an hour. So let me just pull
Tenant Assistance Housing Support Program.
Can you? What number is that?
That's 8 on the 9 on the consent agenda.
Okay, 9 on the consent agenda. All right. So we can. So no one wants to talk about the committee appointments. Okay. So there's the Health and All Policies 1-year implementation plan.
Wait, which committee? Are they all the committee appointments?
All the committee, not the commissions, but all the committee appointments for the internal and external committees for council members. So you can look at that. It's interesting how some of the ones have moved around, like Brown is now on the community programs committee, swapped out for Watkins, and here, let's see here. Really
quick. What does that do, community programs?
It decides on the funding that goes to nonprofit organizations from like the CORE and the CDBG grants that come in.
And number 13.
Number 13. You can find the list of nominations here online. If you have anything that sticks out to you after this, you can send me an email and let me know. I'm on all the same committees as I was before, so no change there.
Did you request to be on any other committees?
I requested to be on the Metro board, but he kept Myers and Matthews on there. So it's disappointing, but at least I'm on the Public Safety and Community Programs committees, which are ones that I...
Has the Public Safety Committee changed?
No. Well, yes, instead of Myers, it's now Watkins and myself and Crum.
Sure.
Okay.
The downtown plan amendment is also interesting. And the monthly report on the general plan and zoning ordinance reconciliation effort.
Whew, it's going to be a lot for an hour and a half. So let's dive in. So health and all policies, implementation, work plan, anything you want to speak to that, Rafa?
No.
So the implementation work is here, and we can just, that's, how many pages is it? It is...
Which number?
I guess I just wanted to say, I hope that pages. Housing and homelessness are part, are really going to be like a key core aspect of the health and all policies.
Section 8, or number 8 underneath the...
Which number is this?
This is 6. Number 6, yeah. Under the core conditions and cap indicators for other framework goals, there is the number 8 is affordable housing and shelter, an adequate supply of housing and shelter that is safe, healthy, affordable, and accessible. Right there. It mentions housing 5 times in the document. 3, 4, 5 of them are all contained to item 8, and then homelessness. Appears once underneath that same avenue. Related indicators for ES, economic stability, include housing stability and collected for S and CC homelessness. I don't know what those acronyms stand for.
I think that's just a name for
S and CC, S and CC, oh, social, cultural, and civic connections. So they're mentioned very little in the document. Granted, it's only 15 pages, but it goes through the process. So if you want to look at it and have any issues or questions and want to email them to me before.
Is this a place for the council to request the governor for some FEMA trailers?
I don't know. Are you being facetious? Or?
No, absolutely not. There's hundreds of empty FEMA trailers. He just put 17 of them in Oakland.
This has to do with how the city is going to, like, this is like a framework for every policy that the city does to include these aspects of health in making policy decisions.
Okay, so maybe that's
are we going to discuss that tonight?
Surface level, probably, because we don't have a lot of time. You're welcome to dive into the document and come back with an analysis. That's what I often suggest for anyone coming to these meetings, is to look at the agenda ahead of time so that you can identify issues and already have questions or issues coming to us, because we only have an hour and a half, so we definitely can't go through and analyze each one of the topics that you're curious about. So I know the agenda only came out today or late last night or something like that. So try to keep an eye out on Thursday nights for the agenda to come out. So
you can sign up. There's an email notification thing for the city, and it emails you as soon as there is one.
But tonight we could have a very brief.
Yeah.
I'd like to address some remarks to the homelessness and housing.
Sure. Yeah. Take it away.
Oh, right now.
Right now.
Okay. So I've been in the shelter program for a month. I've given it up because it's arduous.
Uh-huh. You mean you as a client in the program?
I was a client. Uh-huh. And I've also interviewed quite a lot of people who benefit from the Laurel Street Salvation Army one. Some things are very obvious from the health point of view. People really get fatigued and don't get enough rest in the shelters. The church one, people can get a good, fairly good night's rest. The Laurel Street one, people complain they don't get their rest. There's too many people packed together like sardines. The building was not designed as a shelter, so it's improvised and it's packed. There's not enough monitors to control bad behavior in there. That repeatedly comes out as very obvious. Now the church one, the problem with that is, especially for older people, you get up at 5 o'clock every day in cold weather or whatever, and there's no place to go. And it might be raining and there might be frost. There's just no place to go. We've got to have some day shelter or activity space that could open at that time. That would be about 8 o'clock.
Huh? Let people sleep till 8. They use the building for other stuff.
This is a health necessity.
And the churches.
I didn't know that till I got in the program. The fatigue, the effects of fatigue are you don't drive your car safely, and you can't focus on fulfilling your own needs because you're fatigued. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that till I got in there.
So it's a health
that's
issue.
What happens.
Right, yeah. Health and human services. Yeah.
There's also a bed bug infestation at the shelters over at Housing Matters. Mm-hmm. And there's been
I've heard about that. It's been a long time now, right?
Yeah, and there's like there's a petition that's being circulated, but people are afraid to sign it because they don't want to get kicked out. But people show, we've actually been given bags of
bed bugs.
You see people that live on the streets with like bites all over them, that's because they sleep it quite a lot. So, in places like that. So they need to actually fumigate the entire building, each building completely. And therefore, still need a lot more shelter space and...
Send in the catch.
Yeah, so I'd appreciate it if, if someone's interested in looking at this and finding the correlations to read through it, I'm going to read through it myself, but this looks like, as Rafa mentioned, an overarching kind of approach to the health and wellness policies framework, which is worrisome just because of some of the really abstract language. Develop an evaluation framework for measuring and reporting on equity, health, and sustainability outcomes and improving the well-being of our community. Okay, well, evaluation will be used to determine the effectiveness of the framework. It could be disseminated through the commission. So, and then it talks about optional implementation actions to prepare and submit grant proposals. So the question is, how does this pertain to issues of, for example, the shelter systems, our contracts with the shelter providers, and the health of the people at the Poly Loft and bed bugs? So if you could frame those into questions, that's great. If you want to just send me your comments, and then I can consolidate them into questions that I can pose to my colleagues and staff, ideally prior to the city council meeting, and then again during the city council meeting, just so they have time to prepare their responses.
Do you receive stuff during city council? Do you receive stuff during?
Like emails?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have my computer in front of me and all that kind of stuff. If you send me an email, I mean, I don't constantly check my email, so you could always, like, send me a text or something that'll pop up so that I'll say, oh, okay, I'll check. Because I do get people contacting me via phone or Facebook throughout the process, and I try to, you know, look at what they're concerned about. Okay, I try to stay off of... have the documents in front of me pretty much the entire time, but if I see something flashing and it has to do with politics, I'll respond. So, all right, so that's what's going on. Thank you for sharing that perspective, Nicholas. It's really important to have firsthand kind of testimony and observations of what's going on. So then the next one is tenant assistance housing support programs overview and proposed relocation assistance pilot program. It's only a report that's associated with it. And for people following along, that's item 9. So in 2019, in November, we directed staff to work with County Housing Authority and Community Action Board to explore relocation assistance. And the city currently has multiple programs aimed at assisting those in community in need of emergency assistance. There are a couple current housing programs, partnerships with CAB, the CRLA, the Landlord Incentive Program, security deposit assistance, no-faulted eviction low-income tenants, proposed relocation assistance program. Oh, so it's included in this. In response to the City Council support, staff will continue to work with our partners at both CAB and Housing Authority to discuss the potential for a pilot program that could conceptually include a stipend for funding and moving expenses for eligible low-income families experiencing no-fault evictions. With the pilot phase of this program, staff is pursuing implementing this program in partnership with the Housing Authority as a potential supplement to households seeking security deposit assistance. The households applying for the security deposit assistance will already be income qualified by the Housing Authority, and it is possible that households applying for this assistance may also meet the qualifications of moving expense stipends.
So, can I have a comment on that?
Yeah, we'll go Nicholas, and then Scott, and then Rafa.
It's good. This is a good move, of course. There may be some criticism of it. But I want to point out that this is only dealing with relocation. If we were to prevent people being evicted in the first place, we'd have to come in much earlier with that funding. We'd have to have a public recirculating fund that could make loans to people to meet unexpected failures for them to pay their rent?
Yeah, except this is specifically talking about supporting no-fault evictions. Yeah.
Right. I'm just saying that later on we need to follow up with that kind of a program.
I agree. Scott?
They don't say in here whether or not they've actually helped anybody yet or the number of people they have helped. And the other thing is that I don't know if they're giving money to the Housing Authority, or if they're just getting names of people from them, but the Housing Authority is a quagmire. It's like one of the worst agencies in the whole government here in this county, is the Housing Authority. I mean, I've known people that have been screwed over by them. They always get the information wrong, and they have to keep on reapplying, you know, like, to get the amount of rent that they have to put in under Section 8 is calculated by their income or lack thereof, and the Housing Authority always gets it wrong. And they have to continually keep on giving them the same documents over and over again till they get the numbers right. And it's like, so if I hope the city's not giving them any money.
So that's a question. It says down here under the fiscal impact, the relocation pilot program would be established with available housing funds and costs approximately $10,000 to $15,000 for the pilot year. It would fall under the jurisdiction of the Housing Authority for income qualifications, so there would be minimal cost to city staff time to verify no-fault evictions and monitor and analyze regular reports from the Housing Authority.
People get the money. Like,
Right, but does it go through the housing authority?
Wanted to add, this sort of program, I think, aligns with the idea of diversionary programs that help reduce people entering homelessness, mm-hmm. and it could potentially be expanded to include other sorts of things in addition to no-fault evictions, like rental assistance, and a source of funding for that is the state's HAP program. This particular thing they're recommending be funded by CDBG grants, but it could also be funded by other funding sources if it like the HAP program, if it includes something specifically related to a diversionary model for homelessness.
I hear the housing authority is frustrating and they're pretty overwhelmed a lot of the time. In the next 6 months or so, they're having a whole new computer system so that people can go online and see what forms they have for themselves and stuff like that. Like, they can check their whole file online. And stuff. So they're really trying to make their stuff more user-friendly.
And it looks like we're going to be receiving an informational report and an update on stuff with regards to the program and the proposed relocation assistance pilot program. So, again, if you have a specific question like post to staff, please send them to me by Sunday night so that I can send them in on Monday and we'll go from there. I will check my email Sunday night thoroughly to see what's in there. Keith and then Lee and then Robert. Or Keith and then Robert and Lee.
Okay, yeah, I was, so I don't know if it's exactly related, but the Oakland just made a law that you can't discriminate like on housing by criminal situation.
Right.
So I've been denied housing here because of that.
I put a post up asking people if they thought we should do it in Santa Cruz, and there was a majority, if not all, people said yes, we should. So that might be something to work on moving forward.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was going to bring up. Mm-hmm. It's actually it outlaws background checks.
Right.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, because that sucked that I couldn't rent. And then abusive landlords. In Section 8, you have a kind of a major problem of people get in and then the landlords harass them, and then they get forced out. And they essentially, if any of you here live in Section 8 housing, it sucks because you're under control of the government the entire time you live there. You can't. So I think there needs to be some kind of a change in that, and I know that investigating abusive landlords is going to reduce the number of SROs, but it's housing units, Section 8 housing, but it's kind of frightening how many people end up having to do weird things for landlords and stuff just to not lose their Section 8.
Right.
So that's one thing, and then I was wondering, one last thing on the issue of housing, it would be interesting to know how many houses are owned by companies like the one Mothers for Housing, and how many of them are empty, and how many, and a proposed tax of very high tax for an empty house. I think you mentioned that before.
Yeah, vacant house tax. Yeah, totally. Thank you for those suggestions, and I will definitely make sure to look into them because they just made it into the notes, which is
great. Thanks.
Robert.
At the end of the agenda, there's a long report of the Tenant Sanctuary Volunteer Counseling cases. Is this related to them in any way? And are they still getting funding? What's their situation? Do we know? Is that
at the end of the agenda?
Yeah, it's this thing here.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in the appendix or what is it. It's
online as well.
FYI,
it's an elaborate. I think they required it that every case that came to them had to be itemized and what happened with it. And so
I'm sure that they may give a report on that as incorporated in the thing, because I don't see, there's no like digital version of it that I can find Tenant Legal Services. And then we gotta move on.
Does this impact them in any way, I guess?
It is associated with the work that they do and the money that we gave them. We gave them $10,000 to $15,000, I think.
$10,000
to $15,000, or maybe it was, I don't remember how much. much was.
$15,703.15.
There it is.
Ask and ye shall hear.
As of January 2019, but I think that there was more that we allocated, but I'm not sure. Once they provided the information and justified the program. But anyway, we'll find out, because I'm sure that will be included in the conversation there. So there were people that talked about the moving along.
Can I? Are you going to pull that from consent?
Pull the...
Nine.
Pull nine? Yes. It's weird that it's in consent, because it says we're supposed to receive a report about it. I will pull it, and I will let staff know that I'm planning on pulling it with like a presentation for the event. I'll CC the mayor on it too, so that he is aware of that. Will you make a note of that, Yen? Thanks. And then when you're done, where are you keeping the notes? Are they in the drive? Because I just take the drive.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, under where?
January 24th. No, it's in the main. It's in the first day. First page. Yeah.
Item number nine. Cool.
January 24th community meeting?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Can I ask a question on something we did before?
Yeah.
In the health and all policies, I was reading the plan, the implementation plan, and it talks about staff training on writing the reports, and it says that the interim assistant city manager, the sustainability and climate action manager are going to teach all staff how to write reports, and they have to get a little certification for that. There's no health person there. Later in the report, it talks about reaching out to county health services. I'm confused why, like, and that seems like they're talking about outcomes of things that have happened, but you're teaching people how to write reports about health, how health is applying to the policy you're writing, without a health person telling them how to write.
And you're...
This training is by the second line, interim assistant city manager and the sustainability and climate action manager. And they give a certification to the different departments on how to write the report. Shouldn't that, they say, reach out to a freaking health person?
Yeah, why is there no health professional?
And maybe I'm misunderstanding or something, but it doesn't mention county health services until way later.
Right. That's a good question, and we will include it in that. It's implementation action 1.1 in the implementation work plan. Okay, so I will look at that. Now we will move on, if that's okay with everyone. There were some people that brought up some of these second readings, so this fair political practice thing is to, I believe, meet up with the law. It's a second reading, so we already are moving past it. The food packaging is the 25-cent fee on reusable cups. We're moving on that. The penalties for non-payment of city utilities is to get up with state law, so there's that. And then there's the protecting renters' free speech, which allows renters to put yard signs of political nature in their front yards without retribution or threats from their landlord. So, moving along, a public hearing to what?
How do you know that a landlord is not retaliating? There are numerous ways a landlord can retaliate. I mean,
it's the same way that you can't prove that someone's not renting because I'm black.
Yeah, but there's nothing in the proposed ordinance that even suggests investigating invisible.
You just have to file a lawsuit and then.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be the only way.
Or file a complaint with the city, and the city would have to investigate because it's in our policy now.
So there would be a complaint system.
I think they'd have to come to the city council and make a complaint, and then we'd direct staff.
Well, we've got to do better than that. That's very cumbersome.
It's the second reading. If we change things now, it'll go back into that. What we could talk about is amending it once it's passed, and then adding an amendment to it that would include a complaint.
Well,
process.
I think that amendment would be essential to have some panel to which a renter can complain or expose a landlord's actions that they suspect came from their putting up a political sign. Because I think that's really going to happen. These landlords, some of them are way scheming.
Maybe you could bring that up during this.
I'm not against.
Well, the most likely is they'll just keep taking your sign down.
Well, No, they can't do that.
But they'll do it anyway.
Approve it. Yeah, anyway, all right. So let's stop speculating. We can totally address that as an amendment moving forward. Scott and then Rafa.
Well, I wanted to look at number 13, the purchase of the refuse truck.
Yeah, we looked at that earlier today. I mean, they're just going to argue that. So the question that we're going to come up with, I actually have an intern named Evan that's creating the question, is why is it only that they have a 7-year lifespan, and why is maintenance more expensive than spending $300,000 on a new truck? But what were you going to ask?
Oh, well, it was like the last agenda they bought two.
I noticed that. That's what I was telling them today.
Is this a third one, or is this just they didn't buy two and they're only buying one now? Or is this the third one?
All right, let's add that to the list. What happened to the last two refuse trucks that we bought on the last council agenda? I need to double check that because I don't remember whether it was on the last one.
It wasn't on the special meeting.
We have Rafa and then Lee. I'm looking in the last one, January 14th.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the 12 p.m. public.
Go ahead.
Rafa, just. Oh, I was going to talk about agenda item 18, I think, which is. The downtown plan amendment, and that has to do. One of the things that I think is problematic about it is basically the police department has requested that the permits for people who sell alcohol. Individual bottles downtown, like CVS or New Leaf or whatever, that they don't want to encourage like poor people from being able to buy cheap alcohol in individual quantities. So they're changing. They want to change the law so that only expensive alcohol can be bought. In individual quantities, or the cheap alcohol has to be bought in a pack of more than one.
That's what's in here, yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is about. In addition to the tattoos. Well, I just think it's discriminatory against poor people.
Plus the liquor store, they're going to try to make them only have 30% of their shelf space alcohol, where this is an existing store that's been there for 30 or 40 years, and now all of a sudden they have to reduce their stock.
Limits the times that they're allowed to sell alcohol to. I think they until they have to stop selling at midnight. And 11. So people who are service workers who work late downtown, maybe they even live downtown, would have to drive somewhere else or leave the downtown area if they wanted to buy a beer after work.
Yeah. Is this an outcome? This is proposed for Santa Cruz.
Yeah,
they're trying to limit people walking around drunk downtown. Mm-hmm.
Crap.
Which is a good aim in itself.
Just looking at this.
Well, because it's only rich people will be able to get one around downtown.
I see. Like, if you could, look at the specific language, everyone.
If we could
look at the specific language and pull out the things that are problematic. So, Rafa, you were saying it's definitely here. The police department to help prevent theft of, and sale of alcohol to minors, including but not limited to. And so that's not gonna drill that point because they're going to try and use minors as the excuse for it. And single-serve alcohol containers other than craft beer are not provided for sale. Craft beer is defined as beer made by a small-scale brewery operation that produces less than 60,000 barrels a year. Existing businesses that were approved to sell alcohol for off-site consumption prior to the enactment of the operational criteria are not required to obtain new administration use permits, but are required to comply with the operational criteria of October 10th, 2020. It's determined by the planning and police department to be a nuisance or to otherwise frustrate the intent of the downtown plan. That's an interesting way to say it. Frustrate the intent of the downtown plan. So, what is the intent of the downtown plan? Is a question we need to look at.
Business growth.
Right.
Tourism.
I know, but we need the language. The city may initiate proceedings to revoke the right to sell alcohol.
So, the Downtown Association and the city both had sent out like questionnaires that were targeting homeless people in downtown. And I unfortunately, once you fill it out, I disappeared and I could never, I wish I'd copied all the language. So that was pretty ugly.
I would draw the attention of our ACLU member here.
Yeah, he's ready to go. Go ahead.
The fact that they're trying to discriminate between craft beers and Coors and, you know, Coors Light.
It's not a protected class.
Yeah. Or is not the class, unfortunately, it should be. Ali, you want to say something?
Okay, I wanted to talk about the truck purchase, but since we're here.
Yeah.
In Martin v. Boise, Blackman is cited from an earlier case where he states very clearly, Supreme Court Justice Blackman states very clearly that you cannot cite a homeless person for being drunk in public because there is no other place for a homeless person to be.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get around that by trying to control the sale of the alcohol.
And that's the Ninth District Court?
That's right, which the Supreme Court, Martin v. Boise, footnote by Blackman, which the Supreme Court refused to hear on appeal. So it is the law of the land, certainly in the Ninth Circuit. But I want to get back to the refuse truck.
Yeah, just a second.
When you're ready. No.
Yeah,
when you're ready.
Just
I know, you're trying to write something. When you're ready.
You can't say a person being in public and there's no place for homeless.
Do you remember the footnote number?
Blackman footnote.
No, I don't
well,
know.
Get
I got that footnote number. On the truck, I've been following, this is just background. I've been following Menlo Park Fire, who's buying an electric fire truck. And I just read a story where they took it down to the maintenance yard, and those guys are absolutely crazy about it. Because your typical, I drive an electric car, the typical internal combustion cars got like 30,000 parts, an electric car is like 3,000. All of those pumps and belts and shit don't exist in electric cars. They last longer. An electric refuse truck would last longer, and there would be less diesel fumes for the people doing the operation. It'd be a safer environment for the people to work. There may not be electric refuse trucks yet. But this is, I just wanted to share this as good background information to keep pushing to get electric service vehicles.
It's all electric fire engine, and it could soon be coming to Silicon Valley. KPIX 5's Maria Medina shows us the future of firefighting.
This is what an all-electric fire engine looks like. It's the first of its kind. It takes about 4 hours to charge, and the Menlo Park Fire Protection District hopes to get one on its fleet by 2021. You're used to seeing fire trucks look like this. But soon they could look like this.
Electric vehicles are not new. It's only new to the fire service.
Tonight, the Menlo Park Fire Protection District showed off the world's first all-electric fire engine. That's right, no need for diesel except to fuel the engine's backup battery.
And then it'll recharge batteries again, so you got 8 hours to just keep going.
This isn't the first Bay Area agency to try out an electric vehicle. Fremont Police began using a Tesla as a patrol car earlier this year. But a few months ago,
they forgot to charge it.
The department forgot to charge it, and the Tesla nearly ran out of juice during a car chase.
I'll tell you why.
There are electric refuse trucks, but Mark Diddle told me that they are like they don't have the range that they need to for Santa Cruz purposes.
But in China, there are cities of multi-million population where every bus, every taxi is electric. The Chinese have 450,000 charging stations throughout China. And we only have 45,000 throughout the United States.
That's part of our problem because we don't have the infrastructure yet.
But you have to give a demand.
Well, thank you for that context. I really appreciate it.
All right. Okay.
So,
it was a prior thing.
We're running out of time.
Yeah. Listen, you'll like this one.
Okay.
The living wage one.
Living wage one.
What number? Give us a number.
Ten.
So in the living wage ordinance, they're raising the money a little depending on whether you're getting benefits, and it says what the benefits that you have to get, like workers' comp, it doesn't say unemployment. Salvation Army doesn't do unemployment insurance. It would be nice if in contracts with the city, everybody had that workers' comp, and they had to have unemployment insurance. So if you look down at the bottom of that thing, and it names the kinds of insurances or whatever.
Compensated sick leave.
Compensated sick leave, health insurance. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if we had workers' comp, unemployment in there.
Yeah.
There's no requirement in Santa Cruz for a nonprofit to have unemployment insurance.
And there is no amount for the wage either.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, and I'd love to talk more about it so we can explore it, or if you have, I'll make sure to try to bring it up, or going through these nuts gonna be nuts. Thank you, Yen. It's unbelievable to have someone be able to capture all these thoughts for me to go back through again. All right, so now we're gonna pass these. I'd love if someone wanted to look more deeply. Rafa, it seems like you already have a really strong understanding of item 18, so maybe you could work with me to pull out the things, because I have a lot to review and not a lot of time. That would be wonderful.
I was the only one that went to the planning meeting about it.
Oh, there we go. And then also, Sydney and Yen, if there are things in here that you're interested in following up or exploring within these agenda documents, if you want to let me know which ones you're going to dive into, you can include your analysis in your Sunday intern reports. That should be good. Okay, so amendment to the small cell wireless facilities. I mean, we've been dealing with that for such a long time. I'm just going to wait to hear what it is, and I'll read it in my own time. Newell Creek Dam inlet outlet replacements. All right, so let's just jump to this one, the city beaches public access.
Can we talk about the one before that?
Yes.
The general plan and zoning ordinance reconciliation effort. So that's the alternative approach to the corridors plan.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, this is just setting up the framework that the city could take to essentially shift the density from the east side to somewhere else in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially working with the community to identify where that shift of density should be, and I guess the question is, how long is this whole process going to take, and what's going to happen in the meantime while this goes on and the existing general plan is in place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lee, the builder in the room?
Any of this kind of development needs to be under a story pole ordinance where the outline of the building is created with 2x4s to the exact size of the building. Orange netting is then strung around so that you can see the mass of the building. Most people can't read plans, but you go, if you were to see 190 West Cliff with story pole, you'd be gone, shit, that's big.
I also wanted to just mention that the most important part, I think, is the objective housing standards part, because that one is really going to set what we actually get in terms of our buildings. Because if we don't have, so under SB 330, which is now the law, the builder our developer can have any plan, and we have to approve it as long as it meets the requirements of our planning codes and things like that. And if we don't have objective standards, then they don't have to consider qualitative things that typically would have been reviewed by the Planning Commission or the City Council. This is a way to sort of encapsulate what the community values when it comes to design in an objective, like, a policy framework.
Scott and Lee.
I think this whole thing is the city staff trying to keep the corridors plan in place, because according to the law, the state law that was passed, you have to if you change density within your general plan, you have to put that density somewhere else.
I don't think the quarters plan ever got integrated into the general plan.
That's what the quarters plan was.
The quarters plan was a separate plan from the general plan. The general plan is a specific document that covers the entire city. The quarters plan only was involved in three streets. So I think the city staff is trying to negate what the council wanted, which is to get rid of the quarters plan and start over again and say, oh no, you have to keep this density somewhere.
You do.
That's not the state. No.
It's SB 330. Look it up.
I understand, but
yeah.
The quarters plan was never made part of the general plan. SB 330 says that if it's part of the general plan, you have to, it doesn't say an approved plan outside the general plan. It has to be part of the general plan. The quarters plan, as far as I know, was never incorporated into the general plan.
Rectifying the discrepancy between the existing general plan that we've had since 2012, which allows the density on the east side, and the zoning, which doesn't.
Okay.
Any response? And then we're going to come to Lee.
Okay, go ahead.
Lee and then Nicholas.
Okay, this is why we need an architectural review board. And the purpose of an architectural review board is to make sure that development presents the kind of architecture that the city would like. And they would like, say, you can't build a library all the way up to the sidewalk, so there's no place for the homeless to sit. And we need to have trees, and we need to have landscaping, and there's a certain mass that you're allowed to have close to the street, and it has to step back and step back as it goes higher. We don't have an architectural review board. Look at the crap that's been built. Mm-hmm. And I think an architectural review board is hand in glove with story poles, really important to get that into the way the city operates on development.
Thank you. Nicholas?
Briefly, east versus west. The impact of more development on the west will be much higher because of the amount of traffic connected with the university and the large number of food outlets, and the business structure of Mission Street, it already creates a big impact, and big trucks use that route a lot. So it's much harder to build more developments on the west. But the east side would be less overall impact, so it is preferable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. A lot of good perspectives around the table with regards to it. A good question is, which I think Scott is correct that it was never incorporated in the general plan, but I do understand your argument with SB 330 and the imminent development of some kind that's going to happen, what that looks like. So. I think
I'll be happy to talk to you more about this.
Please, yes. Unfortunately, we're out of time for this topic, and we'll have to move forward into the beach curfew, which is item 22, and then there's so many things. It's crazy. Yeah, it's really crazy to me that they give it to us on a Thursday night and then expect us to be able to go through all of this and have analysis by Tuesday.
That's the point.
Yeah,
they don't want you to be educated.
That's why it's an agenda process, you know, which is
right.
They are giving more time. They only have to give 72 hours.
72 hours, I know, yeah.
And they're giving more. I don't know why they can't give it to you, even though it's not made public. Give it to you.
Right, or to know what they're contemplating putting on the agenda.
As soon as they give it to the council members, they have to give it to the public.
Well, either way, we can't talk about it right now. Let's talk about the beach curfew. I think most of us know the background of it. This is a transition point. Yeah, do you have to leave?
I can stay for another call.
Okay, cool. So my colleagues 6-1 voted to initiate the beach curfew, and now we are at its check-in time, I believe. And this is all giving background, and so the discussion is. The beach management plan has been in effect now for 2.5 decades and is typically updated every 3 to 5 years. There's a draft beach management plan that provides at a minimum a dry sand portion of the main Kyle Beach must remain open to public access, and the wet sand portions of the beach must 24 hours a day, and beachgoers may always use the dry sand to access the wet sand. So it's still crazy. So
well, your key language is if the Coastal Commission approves. Yeah. If the Coastal
Commission. Did anyone appeal this earlier version that earlier this year when they did this?
This still has to go to the Coastal Commission once they.
Did anyone appeal this to the Coastal Commission?
I didn't.
I wonder if anybody knows if anybody did.
I didn't know.
Because when Rochelle Naroyan's plan to ban RVs at night was appealed, they said it would require a full hearing, and that stopped the city because they couldn't really show it would be a serious public safety hazard.
I thought we could just talk to them at the Coastal Commission meeting. Do you have to make an appeal
before that?
You have to make an appeal. You have to file an appeal beforehand. And you can do that, I think. Maybe when the council passed, I'd say speak about it at the city council meeting, or write them, I oppose this. You could even say you intend to appeal it.
And I mean, I think I can appeal it as a council member.
Sure, anyone can appeal.
So maybe that is something that we want to work on, is drafting an appeal to the Coastal Commission about the beach curfew. Now it's touchy waters, especially in this moment of my political career, because if I'm seen as trying to open beaches to drug use, crime, and
almost
poop, then they're going to...
The appeal will eventually be made anyway. Don't hang your shirt on this one.
Right, yeah.
Well, you might let like the Surfrider Foundation or someone like that be the lead. Because for me, like, I understand the concern that our tourism industry has with the beach. And for me, it's more about like a public access use and losing like essentially our downtown beaches at night for any use for any person.
And also what Serge brought up at the meeting last night, which is the number of needles or the discrepancy that's been found in the time that the thing has been in place, and it's like negligible to like six or something was the number he said last night. So.
You mean with a curfew, you have as less. Many needles as...
Six less.
While they were there that month, there were six less needles than the year before the same month.
Yeah.
And they were still trying to use that number because it's still 600 or whatever it is. And then at a different meeting, Tony Elliott said, and most of them were found in the trash can. Mm-hmm. And by the levee. So it was less, and it wasn't even by the tents, and you still threw that number at us to be inflammatory. And they threw the number of calls for service to be inflammatory. The Coastal Commission, I'm trying to find it, whether it's in Parks and Rec, but there's some report where it says the Coastal Commission is saying, if you can prove it's a safety issue, then you can do your closures and stuff like that. Using those two kind of inflammatory facts to prove safety, yeah, you're not proving, say, you're bullshitting.
Well, those needles aren't from the homeless. They're from residents at our house.
We'll come to Leo over here. Thanks, Scott.
Well, one thing about the main beach is the boardwalk claims they own it. And the property that the boardwalk actually sits on was granted to them by the city through adverse possession, which is, and it was the Rockin, Kennedy, Hernandez Council that gave them possession of the beach.
Have a wonderful evening, you two. Thank you for being here. Thank you for these notes. If you include your analysis of the meeting in your intern reports, and please, if you do get a chance and are interested by any of these topics, to dive deeper into them and provide me with some context in your Sunday reports. Cool. All right. Have a wonderful evening.
Please put smiley emoji up.
Would you do me a favor and close the door? Just move that chair.
Yeah, emoji.
Thanks. No one else is coming. Alrighty, so what is the what are your proposed arguments on this?
Well,
so that I can look into?
That the city is taking marching orders from the boardwalk, and that what we really need from the Coastal Commission is, where is the mean high tide at that particular beach, because none of the maps I've seen on the Coastal Commission online have a definite mean high tide line. And to me, in the winter, the waves go all the way up to...
The boardwalk.
Yeah, well, they hit the boardwalk, and they also, over by Beach Street, they go all the way up to the surf break there.
So to me, that would mean the entire beach is under this 24-hour rule instead of the 12, you know, sunrise to sunset or sunrise to midnight rule.
In winter time.
So it's like the entire beach is within the mean high tide.
Mm-hmm. It's true. That was my argument when they started this thing.
When the first curfew was implemented on Cowell 5 years ago or whenever it was, one of the justifications that the Coastal Commission approved it by was that they were mitigating that curfew by allowing Main Beach to be open 24 hours a day. Now, if both of them are closed at night, how are they mitigating the access? Like, what's the next closest beach that's available at night? And so,
Seabright.
For me, it's just problematic that you know, we're just.
Do you know that the Coastal Commission actually heard this, or is this what they claimed would mitigate it if it went to the Coastal Commission?
Talking about the past.
I know. I'm asking about the past.
That they have to approve the beach management plan, and that's what
the local Coastal Commission guy approves it, and then if somebody appeals it, it can go to the big commission. The
right.
question is, did anybody appeal that? That was the reason I asked that question. Because the local Coastal Commission guy is you know, head up the ass of the local staff here. So they're not, you know, he approves whatever they do.
But I'm not sure if it was appealed. Yeah.
Okay, neither am I. That's why. But I mean, that's why I'm asking, when you say the Coastal Commission, I just wanted to clarify what you meant.
No, I'm not clear on your question. Are you talking about what he was talking about?
I'm talking about the prior Cowell Beach.
Yeah. Okay, stuff. The Cowell Beach thing.
Yeah. I'm saying did the Coastal Commission at the appeal rule that the public safety issue mitigated it, or did they in fact, was this what the local coastal guys said, or is this what people anticipated would happen?
Well, anything the local Coastal Commission staff approves has to be approved by the larger Coastal Commission.
And it is, unless it's appealed, usually.
Right. Usually it's just a rubber stamp.
And so that's why
it's just like, you know, the consent agenda on here. The Coastal Commission has a consent agenda that local staff presents all this crap, and they just bubble rubber stamp it.
It's interesting their argument around this. How effective are the restrictions? And then it's like, there are challenges in assessing how effective beach restrictions are, because crime is complex. There's many variables and existing external influencing factors. Drug abuse continues to be a significant contributor to crime within the communities. Similarly, there are times when heavy patrols are needed and other times when beach-related impacts for that specific time period are negligible. Other statistics are very hard to get, so there's no data, essentially, is what they're saying.
Are there crime stats that they're actually providing for this?
This is the report. It's 426 pages long for this nighttime beach restriction summary of the Maine and
they say how many
stats on the number of arrests
in West Side?
Crime.
One of the ways that they're sort of changing their tack this time is by saying, in addition to these nighttime restrictions, they're offering the ability to close the beach entirely based on public health and safety concerns, and and now they're just defining that sort of broadly to include things like tsunami events. But of course, we know that the reality is that it's probably going to be used to close the beach if there is an encampment issue or something like that.
Refugees rushing ashore, things like that.
That's good. So the actual report itself is only 12 pages, it looks like. And then the rest of this are attachments of the Coastal Commission. Oh, there we go.
I think that's the original thing from...
But are there any crime stats, is what I'm asking.
Yeah. And where's the proof of the drug abuse? They make that...
That would be the crime stats.
Standard statement, but...
They don't have the crime stats.
Yeah, these are a lot of attachments of
emails. I don't think they had the last time.
Emails of people that are angry about it. About crime. It's them citing crime, but there's no crime statistics.
Yeah.
What Gillen also.
And never asked to provide crime statistics either. I mean, at least rarely.
They just did calls for service, basically.
And then there is no call for service, is there, or is there a
special feces detector?
There were a significant number of calls for service. I'd possibly even coordinated by Take Back Santa Cruz to.
It's probably by the boardwalk also. The boardwalk probably was calling every night.
We're trying to use Cowl Beach to justify.
Why come the boardwalk has its own police department with its own citations?
Yeah, really?
Because they are above the law.
Yeah, it's really demented, man. And people show me these citations.
So Pittsburgh has 16-year-old employees.
Yeah, so page 5, too.
Who live in Watsonville and have to travel the buses back and forth to get to that.
The other stat that they've used a number of times is that the fecal coliform count spikes during the...
Guys, you got a great voice that just carries really, so it's hard to hear.
Another one of the stats that they often cite is that the fecal coliform counts at cowls spiked during the encampment in August.
Was it cows or was it the river?
Main Beach. Yeah. The fecal coliform count spikes every year in August, and they only looked at the prior year. So basically, you have to do more analysis to see whether or not like the spike this past year was even like significant in the overall. Sort of cycle of fecal coliform counts throughout the year over the years to see if it's even to see if it's even completely anomalous and correlated to the
they might have chosen that because the year before or the other years before were low. They chose that. Not only so the bathrooms were closed and you had poop and water, and there's no needle boxes and you had needles in the trash cans. And you're claiming it's a safety issue. And there was no more crime, so in the report, as in one of the Parks and Rec reports, they start talking about the crime of 2012 and stuff like that. There was no crime during that time. There's no safety, public safety issue proven.
Well, there was a shooting in the boardwalk parking lot.
That wasn't during that time.
That was a nervous city council person.
No, that was like some gang members from Fresno or something.
Okay.
Find
each other. Well, this
is a politically dubious road to walk down because of the tourism and everything. So I might try to stay away from the encampment side of thing and side of things, and talk more about just the public access aspect of it.
Talk about it.
Or get somebody else on the council to push these things. These are pretty reasonable comments we're making.
Right.
It also gives the police more power to just harass anyone who's on the beaches, whether the complaint is near the beaches.
Which isn't usually desirable at all.
Right.
From any point of view.
Well, all right. Anything else with regards to beach access? I'm sure there's a lot that we can dig into. There's a letter to the Coastal Commission they're planning on sending. So,
there's one from Brian O'Neill, attorney.
Yeah. Dear Chair, Dear Chair and Commissioner, respectfully request that the Commission deny one element of the proposed Santa Cruz Beach Management Plan, specifically the nighttime beach closer. So that's cool. I don't know about appeal, but they did write in request of denying it.
And this was for the previous one,
November 6th.
So it was the previous one.
Over the summer, we had like a temporary 6-month curfew that went into effect for Main Beach, and now what this new thing is to make that temporary policy part of our beach management plan, so that the whole thing is in effect for 5 years instead of just 6 months.
Okay, so this is interesting that this attorney's writing about how, in fact, the staff report did not mention once that the purpose of the beach was to eliminate 2 to 3 illegal campsites and provide the city with the ability to prosecute homeless. Commissional staff completely lack of analysis regarding the closure of the impact on unsheltered individuals. It's an attempt to conceal from the commission the true purpose of the beach closure, and complete lack of outreach to disadvantaged communities is inconsistent with the commission's
Environmental justice, I think.
Yeah, equal justice, environmental justice policy. Although the beach closure should be denied, as explained below, the commission should at minimum not approve the proposed beach closure until additional outreach is completed and a new staff report with a candid discussion of the issue and purpose of the closure is provided.
So this was an appeal, or this was, what was this?
This was a letter that was sent to the Coastal Commission on November 6th. Now, I don't remember when we made the decision. It'll say it in the agenda report here.
We're all about time.
I think it was way before that.
Main Beach in September 2019, the council approved, yeah, so September. So this was after the initial one. The attorney wrote this to the Coastal Commission, I think, in anticipation of them hearing it at some point. So there's at least this lengthy letter from Santa Cruz citizen and attorney.
And the commission meeting is coming up in March here.
March 11th, yeah. That's the same meeting where I'm hoping to get an agenda item passed the first meeting of February to increase parking rates around the boardwalk, specifically to go into an impact fund that'll benefit the Beach Flats community. So that'll be interesting to have them both on the docket. All right, well, so there's that letter, which is good, right? But
this is part of that agenda item.
Part of the packet, yeah. It's right here, letter to the Coastal Commission for the Beach Public Access 2020. And then any public correspondence, which is, I want you to fully support the 2020 beach. I strongly support the proposed beach plan. I have some concerns about closing Calzone Main Beach at midnight to sunrise. How is it possible to enforce? As an alternative, why not have floodlights from the Dream Inn for cows from the boardwalk to deter overcomers?
Maybe Hartenfields aren't noisy.
That's super interesting. Sea Beach.
You found the floodlights.
Yeah, I'm very
excited. Restrictions.
Homeless, you can't be drunk anywhere other than out in public. There was a case of Powell versus Texas. Where the hell am I supposed to be, you bastards?
Powell versus Texas is really like the main,
get rid of the city permitted circuit.
The main justification for the sitting and sleeping line
to credit
issue.
There was one Robinson versus California. The other day, they tried to make it illegal to be an hour hall.
Who can do what?
That would have been case law.
So a lot of letters supporting the mandatory plan.
I think they should be reaction for
issues. All right, well, that covers that. We got about 20 minutes left, so we can transition into surveillance technology. Again, you're welcome to write me any analysis that you have after going through the beach management plan or the associated documents, and I can look at that. So here is the... I really hope that the mayor reintroduced the language of enforcement in the resolution. The ordinance, rather. Let me just check really quick, and then we'll go to Lee and Rafa, since Lee specifically asked for it. Go ahead, Lee.
ACLU has been, my understanding, has been collecting endorsements for this from all kinds of organizations. But ACLU Northern California is watching the language very, very carefully. And if Justin pulls things out of there that make it not work, all that will be withdrawn.
Mm-hmm. Based on the information in the annual surveillance plan, City Council, the regular council meeting based.
And there may even be a letter coming from the ACLU regarding this particular ordinance.
Yeah, there was language that came from an email about surveillance. Let me see if I got surveillance.
That's the local ACLU or the one up north?
North.
I also just wanted to...
And we're getting I was told today that we're getting talking points for communication to the council, as well as, I'm sure there's going to be a letter. Because the people who helped Justin write this ordinance are people that he's been trying to get a hold of. They totally blew him off until I put them all on a forum at the same table. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden... He's got the big powerhouses in Northern California at the ACLU and in Oakland have written this ordinance, and it is a really powerful ordinance. One of the problems with the state facial recognition ordinance and ordinances in general is they focus on the fact that facial recognition doesn't work particularly well for black people. So they're saying it's not really well developed. So they're putting time limits. The state, AB, whatever number it was, has got like a 5-year, 3-year time limit on it because they're expecting that it's going to be improved to the point where they can use it. And in China, in the Uyghur region, they're taking DNA samples and during the course of healthcare and backing from DNA samples to a facial picture of what that person should be looking like. And so they're doing those experiments in China. And I can see some merit to that. You have a DNA from a rape, and you can reconstruct a picture of the guy that stuck his dick in that vagina from the DNA that he left there. I mean, I can say that's not a bad use of the technology.
Well, but they also make it so that anytime you have a cell phone, to start a cell phone, you have to do a facial pic in all new cell phones in China now.
Oh, in China, yeah. I mean, I had that option with my iPhone, and I said, fucking way.
Yeah.
Pulling this back to Santa Cruz.
So the language is on the next to last page of the attached ordinance. Next to last page of enforcement. All right, go ahead. Sorry, Rob.
I just wanted to draw your attention to the public works director, or public works staff, I guess, approving without any sort of public oversight the surveillance technology that private citizens group Santa Cruz Neighbors put together to surveil Westcliff essentially in order to do a traffic analysis on the
Drew, had you heard about this one?
Mm-hmm.
They put some cameras up on Westcliff.
Oh yeah, I did hear about that. Yeah, and the police department said we can't do anything about that because they paid for them. But
Public Works guys did it on Public Works poles.
Ooh.
This was like cameras to monitor like parking space use, so they could do an analysis of how often people were using parking spaces.
Yeah.
And essentially target homeless people who are parking for more than 2 hours or whatever.
And then they shared that information with the Santa Cruz Neighbors IT guy that was public surveillance or something without telling anybody? A little strange.
Well,
and they're like, we couldn't tell you because we wanted to see what your general parking.
This was a system I think they leased from Verizon that they installed on public utility poles with approval of the public works director or whatever, but there wasn't any sort of public input or any notice or whatever, as far as I know, that the surveillance technology was being installed for a private purpose.
Yeah, and I noticed that the language that is now here is not the original language or the language that the ACLU would like with regards to enforcement still. It leaves out that entire A and A1, 2, and B, and then just jumps to, let's see, this just jumps to C. Oversight following council approval, yeah, okay. A, B, and then there should be another one that says any violation of this article constitutes an error. I'll put it on the screen for everybody. This is the difference.
Is that included in the packet or not?
Not this version.
No, because we've.
So I guess my point is I would hope that there is a public review process if the city is complicit in permitting private surveillance technology from being utilized.
So I can't take all these notes. Yes. I can't yet. Yeah, I got
This also comes up.
Oh, yeah, Scott, just really quick, because it's been waiting and then.
Well, the biggest problem to me with facial recognition software and surveillance is that it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And it's more imperfect when you're talking about people of color.
Yeah.
And that, so that if they're using that to like find somebody that they think just robbed the liquor store, they may the software may tell them, well, this guy matches too. he's not the guy. And you know they've like perfected it. Because they've worked, it's not actually perfected even with white people, but that's the subjects that they used while building these programs were predominantly white.
Well, but the ACLU is going after it for privacy and surveillance.
Yeah, it's
without
two parts.
Taking it on about whether it works or not.
Well, I mean, that's to me, that's the reason to not even let the cops use it until it is perfect. And then have the discussion whether or not it's a privacy issue.
Well, there's two. There's one of just being surveilled is an issue.
Right.
And then there's one of the facial recognition.
Right.
And a lot of people are saying, put off the facial recognition. But the surveillance at all is we should know when we're being surveilled and how that's happening.
And these stats are now being used in the Parks and Rec report. That's
right. I was in Germany when the Berlin Wall came down and went into East Germany. And the first thing I noticed is all the cameras they had on street corners were smashed. I mean, as soon as those people were free, they smashed their surveillance. Mm-hmm. Right. And now we're like on this headlong rush to put surveillance cameras everywhere. And then, oh yeah, let the cops use the one that's out of my house.
Yeah, Drew, you ask about the Ring is a doorbell thing that has a camera and you can have an app.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of places, police pay people to put them on their houses if they'll share the information with the police.
Right. Otherwise, you have to get a warrant to get that.
Yeah, so could you ask if they have already done this or have plans to do this, or whether this gets regulated or not?
I asked Andy about that, but not specifically the way you phrased it.
We could even make a city ordinance that the police aren't
allowed. But right now the question is, because he might already be doing it. Mm-hmm. There's an app, I can see people, they share them.
What do you call this thing, Serge?
Ring?
Ring.
The Ring doorbell.
Is an app.
It's like an app, it's Amazon.
And they update it, and like I can see the interesting ones of Coyote or whatever. But the police can say, hey, I know you have one, I paid for it, can I see from last night? We should have policy.
Well,
this
police department will get a warrant to get that information if they feel it's appropriate. However, that doesn't preclude them to have a relationship.
And yeah,
with
and like, oh, I'll give it to you. Or I'll give you the password. Sure, you can always have it. I don't care.
Right.
That's
right.
Creepy.
Right.
It's creepy.
Yeah.
In my case, I don't think they got a warrant for the video photo that they use in my case.
Well,
so that happens, and then also they, in my personal direct experience, they take data that is completely not about you at all, and say they have all kinds of electronic, you know, things to prove that it is you, and when it isn't you, and. One of the most common ones was just to pay somebody that looked like me, or there was actually three people on the department that looked like me. They would dress in my clothing, do crimes for me, on my behalf, and then I would get arrested for the crime that I didn't do, but that the cop did.
Well, that's why you should change your head every day.
Yeah, change your hair.
So we're going to Robert, and then we're going to search for this next.
Can you add in this discussion to raise the issues that Serge and Rafa have addressed?
I took notes. Addressing the use of public works employees assisting in mounting of private surveillance equipment on city poles and the access of Ring doorbells.
Direct the staff to find out, you know, how this process happened, when it happened, who authorized it, how much money was paid for it. Because it clearly came into a report from Parks and Rec. Most recent meeting, and it's on their in their agenda packet.
I don't think the city paid anything for it.
Well,
they allowed our public facilities to be used by a private surveillance system.
Unless city employees mounted them, in which case it costs
a city. Yeah, Santa Cruz Neighbors might have paid like $8,000. Like they might have paid a large part of it, but they had a staff do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
the... one of the things in the. Technology and stuff. It talks about prohibition on cities' acquisition or use of predictive policing technology.
Right, right.
Did the police say that he does that?
They used to do it, and now they're not going to do it anymore.
It came from Santa Cruz, from what's his name?
Yeah,
Zach Friend.
And Vogel was into it, and Andy's not.
especially that Vice interview that they did with Steve
Clark. Yeah, that was so damn
hilarious. It was like, oh my God. It's like, see this guy walking with his hood up and he's not looking at me at the police car? That's suspicious activity. It's like,
oh, I remember.
All right, guy.
Right,
what's his name?
Yeah, Steve Clark. Okay, cool. Well,
and one last one.
Yeah.
Compliance for existing surveillance technology. They're asking for a report from all the departments of what you're doing. Could you add to that and what you've done in the last year or two that you've stopped?
That's under where now?
Compliance for existing surveillance technology.
Is that an ordinance?
That's one of the sections of the...
Yeah, there we go. Compliance for existing surveillance technology. I'll sit the city department possessing or using surveillance technology prior to the effective date of this article shall submit a jointly submitted or jointly submit a proposed surveillance use policy and civil rights impact report no later than 180 days following the effective date of this article for review and approval of the city council. And then
you're gonna put a policy within the next 180 days, but also listing what you've done recently.
What's recently in the last 5 years?
Where is existing surveillance happening in the city now on public property not involved with specific criminal investigations?
Yeah, well, that's a different thing. What he's talking about is what the existing technology and surveillance that exists, and then not just a report on a request on how to move forward from now, but a report on what they have done for transparency over the last 3 years.
3 years.
But can we also find out where this current surveillance is happening? Because the police department claims there are no surveillance happening on any public property.
Well, that's what this compliance. Any city department or departments possessing or using surveillance technology are supposed to come forward with a plan, I believe, or use of unapproved technology. Prohibitions on cities' acquisition. Well, I guess it says existing.
That's so. About use of technology. I'm talking about the existence of actual surveillance devices that are currently in operation, like around City Hall.
Right. That would fit
yeah,
into service requests.
Within 6 months, they got to turn a report into
report
the city council.
Not just on current surveillance.
I'm just interested in the location of these devices. I put in a request as a public record, and they claim they have no such devices. When in fact, when you walk into the police department, that's exactly what you see.
And what about parking garages? I bet there's some.
Oh, you know, it's bullshit, and it's essentially a violation of public records.
Wouldn't it be
legitimate public records request as well?
That's the surveillance. All right, Scott, and then we got Scott and Lee.
One of the things that I was thinking is that even if you have a prohibition of the city's police department doing this, they can call in an outside agency like the county sheriffs or the FBI to bring in their surveillance equipment and set up a temporary surveillance anywhere they want and not have to tell you guys they're doing that, you know? So I don't know if there's a way that you can force them to alert you when they bring in an outside agency to surveil.
Or when they receive surveillance from an outside agency.
Yeah,
they use the drones from the sheriff, and they use that technology that can... When there was the shootings in Live Oak, they had cameras pointed at Soquel or whatever.
They use license plate readers for a very short time.
License plate readers, yeah.
Very short time. Is it worth it to offer an amendment to put the deleted language back into this bill?
That's what I have here. First, for item 22, I'm going to reintroduce the language that removed. Search, please. Thank you.
Okay. I'm cool with it. Just bust the tone a little bit.
I've been telling people not to talk over each other all night long. Please don't talk over each other when you're here, especially when we're almost done and I'm trying to finish this. So, absolutely, I hear you, though.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I have it here to reintroduce the language that was removed, but contact the police chief ahead of time to understand why it was removed and how I could have possibly missed it in the meeting, because Justin said that we were in a meeting and I agreed to the removal of the enforcement clause, which doesn't make any sense, but I could have missed that part of the conversation somehow, because I'm overwhelmed stuff, so either way, there's that. What were you saying over there, Serge?
Oh, nope. Wasn't important.
All right. We got 4 minutes left. Any burning things that anyone wants to say? Otherwise,
here's a. This is like not on the agenda, but I notice when I drive up East Cliff and get to Hiawatha, the cars coming towards me blind me, and I almost hit people repeatedly.
That's true.
And so it seemed like there needs to be like a blinking light or something there.
Oral communications.
Cool. I'll do that.
I'll be at Chris's cabinet tomorrow, and probably Scott too. And I'll just tell him that we've covered up to number 24. And meeting, we can do the end and then work our way back.
Sounds good. Just don't communicate my stance, just to be sure about the Brown Act.
When
does this happen?
Chris is out at
3, I think, right?
At 3 or 3:30 at Ron Pomerantz out there on Gurkey.
At his house.
At his house, yeah, Ron Beck.
Scott, I have our final comment.
When there's advisory body appointments, when you click on, the little thing on the side of the PDF files, there's nothing about these people. I mean, I think when you submit something on, to...
The interviews are on Tuesday, and all their applications are
on Tuesday. I know, but they should have it so that when you click on it, you can click on that person and see what they wrote.
I agree.
That's a good idea.
I agree. Well, thank you everyone for coming. I wish we could spend more time doing this in general, but please, if you have additional items, then please let me know.
Do you have any thoughts on who you're interested in?
I have my notes in my binder. I don't remember their name. I mean, Candace is great. Who else was out that wanted to be there? Was it you or the other?
No.
No, yours. You are which one?
I haven't applied for any commission.
Oh, really? Yeah, I could have sworn you spoke about something. But